You're listening to a podcast from 702.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
702. Let's walk the talk.
I want us to pay some tribute now to the founding president of Zambia, Kenneth Kaunda, who died yesterday at the age of 97. I want us to reflect on his relationship with the ANC, his contribution to the liberation, not only of this country, but the other countries on the region. This is the man who hosted a number of liberation movements, right? Frelimo, Ampla, you know, SWAPO in Namibia, you name it, ZAPU of Zimbabwe, and of course the ANC from here in South Africa. And it was to a great cost of financial threat by Western countries, military attacks, but he did it anyway. And this is the man who, even post his presidency, he was able to be so loved and played a role in, not only in his country, right, as a founding father, but on the region, conflict resolutions. So I want us to reflect on his legacy. I'll bring in a historian who will be live to us from Zambia when we can talk about his legacy. But let's first chat to the Minister of State Security, Ayanda Dlodlo. Minister, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for inviting
me. How are you remembering Mr. KK this morning? Yesterday we learned of his passing, and I know you were in exile in Lusaka. What are your memories?
You know, my memories of the last man standing from the founding fathers of the Organization of African Unity is that of solidarity, the love for freedom, the advancement of the cause for Pan-African ideals. And, you know, he was an all-rounded internationalist who can lay claim to the fact that only one country in the continent is not liberated, that all of the countries were liberated in his time, together with our founding fathers of the African liberation movements, but also more specifically to our country, the Southern African liberation movements, which included Zimbabwe and Namibia and countries like that. Yes.
You know, sometimes I think we take for granted the contribution that he made at the time when he was housing all those liberation parties. I mean, he made it Zambia's duty to support not only the ANC, but the other parties, Frelimo, Ampla.
Yes.
How critical was that, you know, that contribution to the region? And let's talk specifically to the ANC now. When Zambia was housing its headquarters in Lusaka, how important was that for the ANC to continue its work towards liberating this country?
You know, most of the Southern African liberation organizations gained their independence way before we did, being the oldest liberation movement in the continent. And it was only really because of countries like Tanzania and countries like Zambia, to be specific, who made it easy that they were the front line of the borderline between their countries and the rear. So their rear, in a way, was the front. When in our case, the rear was really the rear, and the front was a country or two before we could reach South Africa, making it a lot more difficult for us to move people, to move materials into South Africa. For the others, it was much more easier because they bordered with Zambia, so their rear, in a way, was also their front. With us, it was much more difficult. But they can, I mean, they celebrate. I mean, if you can see what Botswana has done, declared a 7-day mourning period, flags by a flying half month, it's a way of saying we celebrate his life. He leaves a very rich legacy, a colossal figure of African solidarity and liberation. This is how we should all celebrate the man who sang Tiende Pamotzi, the man who carried that white handkerchief wherever he went, the man who knew that the liberation of every country in the continent is liberation of the continent itself.
Minister, thank you so much for making time and for availing yourself to pay tribute to Dr. Kaunda.
Thank you so much for inviting and giving me this beautiful opportunity.
All right. Ayanda Dlodlo is the Minister of State Security and one of the ANC leaders.
702.
The Clement Manyathela Show.
Let's walk the talk.
Let's now hear from Mavuso Msimang, who is an ANC veteran. Mr. Msimang, thank you so much for your time. Welcome to the show.
Clement, thank you very much, and I greet your listeners too.
How are you remembering Dr. KK this morning?
And so much has been said. I listened to the last minute of what Ayanda was saying, and it's quite true. You know, what you can't exclude in your memory of Kaunda would be that, A, he was a committed Pan-Africanist. He was extremely committed to the liberation of Southern Africa. Zambia connects to 8 other countries, I think, most of which were involved in the struggle. And so Zambia bore the brunt of keeping people there and being attacked for its sins. You are also talking about a person who was very highly principled and who acted according to what he believed was right. Sometimes took positions that were not very popular, even with liberation movements or some other radical countries in Africa. The thing about him was that he always had a bottom line. I will talk to Smith, Ian Smith. I will talk to BJ Foster. You think it's a waste of time? This is what he would say to maybe those who didn't agree with him. But you were always certain that the bottom line is he wants majority rule in each of these countries. If they didn't make a concession on that, that was the end of the discussion.
And what do you think, what lessons should we draw from his life? Maybe talk to me about the legacy that you also personally think he leaves behind.
I think what he has done, a lot of the, you know, the willingness to sacrifice for the total liberation of Africa. I had some reference to the fact that we were the last country to be liberated on the continent, if you excluding Sarawi up there. So the brunt of the early brunt of the attacks, let's say, the positions that Zambia took related to the liberation of Mozambique, of Zimbabwe, Namibia, and Angola. Every liberation movement that got involved in the struggle to liberate their own countries had a base, had offices, had space in Zambia. Now, the thing that's not usually talked about is that when the United Nations imposed sanctions on Rhodesia around 1965-1966 and said there should be no trade with that country, Zambia literally almost committed suicide. Kaunda decided that all the routes to the south, and these were the most traditional routes to East London through what was called Salisbury, Harare, to Beira in Mozambique. These were the routes for the imports and exports of Zambian products. And also, there was a lot of trade between Zimbabwe itself and Zambia, as well as South Africa. To take a decision to implement effectively the sanctions, I don't think any other country, quite frankly, has ever done that. And some people thought he was committing suicide, and it was tough for the Zambians. He created a conduit, an exit point, on what was called Tazara, the Tanzania-Zambia Railway Authority, which took the goods from the country, the Copper Belt, and from Lusaka all the way to Dar es Salaam, building a new railway line which did not exist, opening up roads that did not, that at best were patchy roads in some instances, gravel roads, and the exports, imports of Zambia moved through that. The Zambians suffered, I'll tell you that, economically. Mm. Quite a lot of complaints. But all of that, because he was committed to implementing a resolution against racism.
Thank you so much for coming through. Mavuso Msimang is the ANC veteran. Thank you for coming through and paying tribute to Dr. KK. It's 19 minutes after 10 o'clock. When we come back, I'll bring in the Zambian historian, Dr. Sishua.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
702. Let's walk the talk.
It's 22 minutes after 10 o'clock now. Let's bring in the Zambian historian, Dr. Sishua, Zambian historian and lecturer at the University of Zambia. Dr. Sishua, thank you so much for making time. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
The legacy of KK, we see him as a unifier on the region, but he did more than that, even just in Zambia particularly, making some things free for Zambians when he was president, education, health. How are Zambians remembering him today?
They remember him, I think, in three or four main ways. The first is they remember him as the founding father of the country, you know, having led Zambia to independence in 1964. They see him as someone who not just benefited from the leadership of other people. You know, he himself was recruited into the nationalist movement in 1953 by Hari Mwanga Nkumbola, the leader of the African National Congress of Zambia. What Kaunda does in power after 1964 is really to support talent as a way of reflecting back how he himself ended up in leadership position. So they remember him as that father figure who led the country to independence, but also one who developed leadership, because he felt the country was not just about him. You know, he understood that time would come when he had to step aside and raise a number of leaders, including, you know, Rupia Banda, Levi Mwanawasa, who served as his successors subsequently, because they were exposed to leadership position under Kaunda's rule. So Zambians today reflect back on this man who nurtured talent and developed leadership beyond himself. But also they remember him, as you correctly said, as someone who presided over significant investment in social sectors like education and health for free. You know, Zambians went to school from primary school to education without paying anything. The state provided for these services for free. And when they look back, the current generation cannot imagine that education, now out of reach for many Zambians, was once a free service. You know, in South Africa, you have this push for free fees must fall, which reflects a desire by young people to get an education and make a success of their lives. You can imagine that there was a time in Zambia in the 70s and 60s, for example, when all these opportunities were actually available. So young Zambians look back to the Kaunda years with nostalgia to say, we wish the state was able to actually provide this kind of services. Mm. But they also remember Kaunda as someone who gracefully conceded, you know, defeat in 1991 when he was defeated by Frederick Chiluba of the opposition movement Mount Park Democrats. Now, at a time when this was happening, it was unheard of for incumbents to peacefully concede defeat and overpower. So what Kaunda did, in effect, was to establish a democratic tradition where leaders go voluntarily and peacefully without a fight when they lose power. And this is what happened when Zambia experienced the second transfer of power in 2011. So that is part of Kaunda's legacy in Zambia, but also as somebody who really united Zambians across different ethnic divides.
How important was that, Dr. Sishua? How important was that tradition? Because as you say, he conceded defeat in 1991 when he lost power. And I wonder how important that tradition he started was in the democratic project. Because as you said, it was unheard of at the time.
That's right. Now, I think it provided a perfect example to Zambian successive leaders to say that, you know, democracy requires leaders to rise above you know, personal interest for the sake of the nation. If you look at 1991, this was a time when, you know, democracy was not yet established in other parts of the region. In Zimbabwe, for example, even today, you could say that Kaunda provides a good example of how leaders should step aside when they feel that when people feel that their time is up. Mugabe remained in power until 1970, for example, and you could say that Kaunda provided examples to Southern African leaders as well, even the ANC in South Africa. Much of the, you know, the lesson that, you know, we see President Mandela, Mbeki and others actually implement when in power were extracted from Kaunda in terms of the importance of moral principles, the desire to respect the will of the people when the people feel that your time is up. And Zambia's successful leaders have really tried to uphold that tradition, because what explains the country's peaceful nature, democratic culture, for example, owes much to Kaunda's decision in that pivotal moment to step aside, when he could have easily commanded the military, for example, to say, can we preserve power? Can we hold on to this and fight back? And we could have seen the strife that we see in neighboring countries centered around power if it wasn't for his leadership.
Yeah. How did he transform himself post his presidency? Because, you know, he became a revered figure, right? His role in not only raising awareness around HIV, he played an important role in conflict resolution. He intervened and went to Zimbabwe. He went to Kenya. He almost became someone he was not during his tenure as president. How did he transform himself?
You're absolutely right. It's fair to say that Kaunda became revered post-power than he was in power. When he left office in 1991, he was a deeply unpopular figure, you know, blamed for the collapse of Zambia's economy and widely seen as repressive. But he survived long enough for his reputation to improve. The dignified way in which he conceded defeat and allowed the peaceful transfer of power, you know, the failure of his successors to match his significant achievements in office, and his tireless campaign against HIV/AIDS post, you know, power, all contributed to his reincarnation. You know, in particular, he gained respect for acknowledging that AIDS was real, which was very unusual at the time. He even disclosed that one of his sons had died of the disease. So he tried to take stigma away. In a sense, time has rehabilitated Kaunda, as its passage allowed people to reflect on his record with a necessary critical distance. And his involvement in social activities, his retirement from politics in the early 2000s, for example, meant that, you know, his Chiluba's successor, Levi Mwanawasa, was able to accord him the dignified status that he deserves as Zambia's founding fathers. He became more of a stabilizing influence on Zambia's leaders, staying above the partisanship that, you know, politics that is characteristic of politics. And it was difficult in the 1990s, because the 1990s was the period when he was, you know, prevented from running for office in 1996 after a constitutional amendment that excluded him. He was declared stateless, and Chiluba, his successor, said he was from Malawi. He was locked up for treason in 1997 over a failed coup attempt. Mm. So that period was very difficult, but largely that was because he remained in politics. So his successor saw him as a competitor rather than a nationalist figure who deserved respect. At that status was restored to Kaunda by Levi Mwanawasa.
Yeah, Dr. Sishua, we're out of time, but perhaps in just 20 seconds, has he ever addressed, because there have been some controversies, like the one-party state, for instance, not allowing other political parties to be players. How did he address that post? Did he ever regret that?
No, not publicly. He felt that, you know, the one-party state was necessary at the time when he imposed it, because you could not prosecute the liberation struggle in Southern Africa if it was a one-party state which opened the country up to external attacks, especially from the apartheid regime in South Africa. He also justified it on account of the need for national unity given Zambia's diverse ethnic groupings. So he still maintained, and I think with some justification, that moment was necessary, because if you remember, it was typical at the time for African leaders to declare one-party states, and Kaunda was, in that regard, not an exception.
Thank you for making time. I really appreciate it. Zambian historian and lecturer at the University of Zambia, Dr. Sishua.